You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
From our studio to yours, this is Various Artists.
Ahia he mari e tēnā koutou katoa. Ko mea toka ingoa, no mai, hari mai ki Various Artists mō tēnei rā. This is just me in the studio today. Soph is off on another radio avenue, but I'm sure it'll be all good. We've got a stacked show for you today. E whai ake nei coming up on the show today, I had a kōrero with poet Liz Brislin about her latest book, Show You're Working Out. And so I've had a kōrero with Steve Carr about his current exhibition, How to Disappear, at Gow Langsford, which opened earlier this week. He aha o whakaaro, we'd love to hear your thoughts on these pieces. So tukupata hi mai, you can text us on 5395 rimatoru iwa rima, wai mai rane, or give us a call in the studio on 309-3879. Also after the show, you can catch all these pieces and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com.
Oh, that's a good art.
How to Disappear is an exhibition by multidisciplinary Ōtautahi-based artist Steve Carr, currently on at Gow Langsford Gallery. In a body of work composed of photographs and moving image work and sculpture, Steve stages a series of failed attempts at disappearance, reminding us that no matter how much we try to hide, something in us always remains visible. Seen crouched and stood behind invisibility shields, bushes and trees, coloured smoke bombs, Carr repetitively fails to camouflage himself, giving the works a certain absurdity and comedic quality that has been a reoccurring theme in Carr's practice. Sophia caught up with Steve Carr about the making of How to Disappear and his creative process.
Kia ora, Steve Carr. I'm a artist based in Christchurch and a lecturer at Islam School of Art. Recently done an exhibition at Gow Langsford Gallery exploring kind of themes, going back to themes in a way, of an earlier practice. Looking at humour, materiality, and I guess this idea of disappearing in a modern world.
Yeah, you kind of touched on it a little bit there, but your current exhibition at Gow Langsford, How to Disappear, explores this idea of desiring to disappear and the act of camouflaging, but also failing to do so, kind of creating that quite humorous effect. Can you tell me a bit about how the idea for this project came about?
Yeah, well, actually came about through a meeting with a friend of mine who is a website designer and was working with a client who is showcasing these amazing cabins in the middle of nowhere in Queenstown. And their idea was to bring in an artist who could be involved in the sort of marketing or campaigning of it. And he felt a bit awkward about asking me, but I was just in a place which I was, really interested in exploring different ways of making art, and I think also artists quite like a brief, so I kind of was keen about approaching that. Through conversations with them, we sort of talked about how this space was about getting away from the everyday, no cell phones, no interruptions, and I was thinking about that idea of active disappearing, but also thinking about how humour is a very human thing. It kind of brings us together, it personalises stuff, and I thought, so that was kind of the idea, this idea of disappearing badly, and thinking about those sorts of films that use slapstick comedy, but also also kind of the structure of comedy as well, and how that could be introduced into a process for building on ideas for a show.
And this is your first exhibition with Gow Langsford after over 20 years with Michael Lett Gallery. How has the transition impacted the way you've approached your practice?
Yeah, when I stepped away from Michael Lett, I didn't have another gallery to go to. So I have got a gallery, station gallery in Australia, but within New Zealand, I didn't have anything, and I was sort of quite comfortable with that. And it also sort of opened up this possibility of just really making work and being really experimental, making work that could fail, and yeah, just sort of using the studio as a way of unpacking ideas. So it kind of offered freedom, I guess, in that respect. And I guess that's probably also why I took on the project for the marketing thing. So being able to get back to the studio sort of gave me time to reflect on the last show I had with Michael Lett and the things that I really liked about that show, but also the things that I thought could be approached differently, I guess. And I think the thing I took away from that was I had a practice that was very much driven around humour and also performance. And that last show I did was more around poetics and materiality, which are still things that I love to explore. But I guess I started thinking about the way I used to make work and this idea of being more directly involved in the work, both physically being the work, but also reacting to the moments within making that work, as opposed to the previous show, which was more about outsourcing and getting these works put together to kind of contextualise the show.
As a multimedia artist, How to Disappear is showcasing three different sides to your practice: photography, moving image, and sculptural work. Why did you choose to explore this idea of disappearance across these disciplines?
Yeah, well, I guess to start with the first part in terms of the different mediums, I think that definitely came about from just an openness to really experiment and to do all these ideas, even if I wasn't sure about whether the strengths lay in that. And again, reflecting on previous practice, I kind of feel like I've always been quite good at making strong decisions around what idea suits the medium best. So, you know, I'll kind of think of something and go, oh, that needs to be a moving image work because it does the things I want it to do, or this needs to be photographs, etc., etc. But I guess I was thinking about what happens when you don't do that, and if you use this idea of repetition and playing out the same thing, which is what it goes back to what I said before about the comedic structure, and that idea of introducing a joke, repeating the joke, and then kind of finishing the joke. There was always this sort of formula around humour and the three stages, but of course that got broken apart with things like Seinfeld and stuff, where you kind of go, well, what happens if you repeat it 1,000 times? Does it become something else? So I was interested in how I could do the same thing, whether it be me as a pretending to be a bush, as a photograph, as a sculpture, and a film, but how do I approach it so that it doesn't feel repetitive? It feels like each medium, I guess, highlights a different aspect of the work. And of course, once all these works started coming together, I really became interested in how that relationship worked when they were together. Things like the invisibility shield, for example, which was this thing I bought off the internet, which claimed to be this incredible piece of, you know, magical equipment that can make you disappear. when it arrived, it really highlighted that the advertising images were really staged, and it kind of works, but if you get the right lighting, the right angle, it does it. So I was interested in how I could produce that through these series of photographs, but then also having the moving image work where I feel like I'm hiding behind, but I'm still quite visible through that frame. So playing with those sorts of ideas, I thought, became really interesting. And there's another work where I'm letting off coloured smoke bombs, for example, and as a film, it didn't work. It just felt like a recording of an event that sort of didn't go anywhere, didn't offer anything through the material. But I did like the movement, but also I like that photography holds that movement. So there was this really nice decision on the day that the photographer would walk around me. So I'm standing on the singular spot, but the camera moves around and captures these moments. So there's still the sense of movement in the still photography. Or another work, which is me as many Steves trying to hide behind a tree in a bright orange jacket. So on one hand, it's just like a dad joke with the bright top and the fat belly that pokes through the the tree stump, but also it speaks to photography that, you know, if that camera was moved slightly, I would be hidden. So I sort of started thinking about those different relationships as well. Some of the decisions around the process where I was sort of, you know, I didn't really know what the show would be. So there was moments when I was thinking about, could it just be a singular work, or do these works work in series? And I guess I really enjoyed this exhibition because it came from a point that wasn't defined. I didn't really know what the show was. It wasn't even going to be a show at first. It was a project for a friend that once I'd done it, I got really excited about the potential of it. So being able to build on it and just keep building on it, and then making decisions around whether, you know, I edit, halfly edit, or whether I put everything in, or I kind of really enjoyed that. And then even just thinking around scale became super interesting for me. And again, sometimes it's reflecting on your practice. It's like sometimes with photography, you have a tendency to make everything big. And like for the smoke bomb work, for example, felt like it needed to be big because the smoke had to fill up a certain amount of space. But I was interested that the photos of me as inside of a bush costume didn't work at that scale. You know, they're actually being really small, compressed and condensed the contrast of the colours, and you could see the silhouette of the body much, much clearer, and the landscape became part of that image once it was smaller. And the same thing with the photos of the invisibility shield. You know, I kind of thought them being really big would be more painterly, or would be more dynamic, but they weren't. So yeah, I guess I really enjoyed the sort of not knowing and having to resolve and having to make decisions around the show based on what I wanted the work to do, but really thinking about the individual works and then how those works would come together in a singular space. Because, you know, part of my fear was the repetition, you know, how will, you know, you take something that is essentially a strength of your practice of being able to choose what medium's correct, and then you kind of go, I'm going to throw that out, I'm just going to put everything in. You know, you're sort of putting yourself out there to go, oh, it's a bit kind of boring, you know, it's the same thing over and over again. So I found that challenge and I don't want to say risk, but there was something, yeah, that sort of unknown of whether it was going to work was really exciting for me.
You've kind of weaved through in your answer there that this exhibition has you inserting yourself into the works, leaning into something that's almost performance art. How does using yourself as the subject better articulate what the works are communicating for you?
Yeah, well, look, my original practice was performance based, so I guess it was a sense of coming back to that. I've always really enjoyed artists who put themselves into the work. You know, I could use models to be the stand-in, but I guess they were about my presence in this space as well. So I'm hoping I'm using something that is directly about me, but also is more of a universal connection to other people as well. So I think, you know, how to disappear, I think, is something that we all relate to. It's not Steve disappearing, or it's just this kind of, and also my face is hidden within all of the images as well. Mm-hmm. But I think often there's this assumption that the artist is present and that it is them. I think what I liked about it was that this work, this whole body of work, was about me experimenting in the studio. So it just made sense that it was me. And I didn't want to go to involving actors or creating that, because that becomes a different way of making.
Mm. I did want to talk a little bit more about where this body of work was shot as well, and the subjects that you've used. The works are all shot or inspired by forestry, with a range of subjects being used as the mode of hiding. We've got trees, bushes, invisibility shields, coloured smoke bombs, which we've kind of spoken to a little bit throughout our corridor. Some of them, are, of course, more convincing as disguises than others, but what kind of informed these subject choices specifically?
It stemmed from just open research, really, where I was just looking at all sorts of things, whether it was scary movie parodies or kids who hide their eyes and have covered their eyes and feel like they can't be seen, or dad jokes, or, you know, that kind of thing of believing in that moment, even though it's not quite there. I think that's kind of interesting. Yeah, so I think there's that thing about personalising it, because we've all experienced parts or all of those aspects, so it's kind of relatable. In terms of the forestry, that was, again, because the place that I was shooting the project for was in Queenstown, but I really liked thinking about Queenstown as a space within New Zealand, how it's very desirable, but it's also kind of ridden with pine trees, and it's so I thought there was some kind of political stuff there as well, and the way that it's being sort of torn up and rebuilt, and I think that the works, you've spoken to humour, and I think that even the works are humorous. It's for me, humour is a way of giving the audience like immediate access into the work. They'll think they find the action funny, or whether they're just drawn to the beauty of the smoke by sort of sitting with the work. I'd hope that some of those political aspects come through a little bit, and thinking also in terms of, I guess, comedy's role or sometimes struggle to do that. You know, comedy never wins an Oscar award, but there's some really great comedic films out there which are highly political. You know, something like Blazing Saddles, for example, is such a powerful film in terms of what it's talking about, but it's, you know, it's Mel Brooks and it's silly, and that's kind of what we think about. But when you rewatch that, it's got some pretty incredible things. Even Scary Movie has these kind of little digs at making us aware of racism and inequalities, and really is this kind of great way of pointing the finger. And I was thinking, even just the history of humour and comedy, it was the joker that was always, or the fool that was the only one who could really see the truth.
I guess to kind of add on to that and kind of wrap up this theme of comedy that we've been talking about, that underlies both this exhibition and a lot of your practice, generally, why do you find yourself keep coming back to this theme? What is, like, the thing that's grounding you in that is kind of a realm of exploration?
Like, I think comedy is really important, and I think sometimes we get really burdened with the political aspects of the world, and it can kind of become quite depressing. So sometimes, it's not just kind of ignoring it. It's using comedy to kind of digest it and think about these things in a different way. And I think comedy is always vital to us as humans. And yeah, I think that it's really important, and it's something that has been used for as long as we can remember. And I think that, yeah, it's a kind of a nice way to think about the bigger issues.
That was Ōtautahi-based artist Steve Carr speaking to Sophia about How to Disappear, which is on at Gow Langsford City Gallery until the 23rd of August.
Various artists, so you can go to the opening for more than just the snacks.
We've now got some Julia Jacklin for you. This is I Was Neon.
I could see it all, so my favourite jazz solo of all time. You know that one that's like boop it
barrel. Now I feel like they
definitely
improvise like. You guys still talking about jazz?
Yeah, just trying to work it out, man.
Do you know Grover?
Washington, Grover Washington, Limelight, great album.
Grover from the Muppets.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess so.
Does he like jazz?
All kinds of people love jazz. The 95 BFM Jazz Show. Sundays at 12 with Blind Mango Chutney, Def Jim, Miss Dom, Francis Chan, or Dr. Mark Baines. The 95 BFM Jazz Show. 12 till 2 p.m. Sundays, thanks to San Ray.
Hello, my little sparrows. If you're listening right now, then this message was meant for you. Claim it if it resonates. I've got my tarot deck here. I'm going to pull a card to illuminate an intention for you. Just shuffling. Ooh, it's the B card. This card represents prosperity, greatness, clout. Oh, I love this for you. Expect an abundance of free things. Music, merch, coffee, ticket.
Get a B card today from 95bfm.com for just $4.20 a month and be in to win tickets, albums and more.
Tēnā koe. Ko Peter Robinson, tōku ingoa. You're listening to BFM.
Liz Breslin is a queer poet, editor and performer. Her new book, Show You're Working Out, is a collection of poems that weave together topics of complicity, cycling, DIY, domestic abuse, the queerness of hands, pride, Pilates, wellness culture and white supremacy. The title of the book, Show You're Working Out, shows a play on the word your, one being Y-O-U-R, which refers to what we are being asked to do with maths in our when we used to go to school when we were young, show you're working. And the other, Y-O-U apostrophe R-E, speaks to how it feels important to show that you're working out within a relationship or small community when you are wanting to be accepted. Together, destabilizing the singular narrative within the collection. I had a chat with Liz about her overall practice as well as her new book. Could you start off by introducing yourself and your overall practice a little bit?
Okay, so I have some kind of practice in doing this because we always have to write a bio, and it's funny because mine has grown over the years, and now it mostly starts with words like queer and feminist and tangata treaty, and I think that's because I hang out in spaces where those things aren't as common as they could be, and so I sort of want to put those words in people's faces. I guess also I'm sort of known a little bit as a spoken word poet, but I also make zines and do a lot of cut and paste work, so it's kind of funny to me that there's this delineation between like a page poet and a stage poet, because I'm kind of both. And I'm based in Otipoti, so I'm currently obsessed with being warm enough but also not damp, and that that is an ongoing thing. And also I think like the last thing I'll probably say about that is that I always find it funny to introduce like only myself, because I feel like I belong to such a strong community of like friends and writers and writer friends, but I get it. I'm increasingly understanding that I have to put myself forward as someone who has a story in that community, so that's what I'm doing.
Beautiful. And you have a new book that has just been released titled Show You're Working Out that showcases a new collection of poetry from you. Could you speak a little bit to this new body of work and the kind of key themes and areas that it explores?
Sure. So I guess the first thing to say is about the title. So Show You're Working Out, it's spelled two different ways. So there's Show You're Working Out, Y-O-U-R working out, like, you know, like you have to do in maths exams or science and stuff, like show you're working out and like demonstrate how you got to this conclusion, I guess. And then there's the other one, Y-O-U apostrophe R-E, which is like the pressure to conform, I guess. And a lot of, and I'm thinking about that in both ways in the book. So it's based around Pākehā stories in the rural south of Te Waipounamu. And it's looking at stories that aren't like your common southern man, she'll be right story, you know, like Pākehā women's stories, Pākehā queer stories, the kind of stories that like don't fit the dominant colonizing narrative, and sort of looking at how we've I guess, created that narrative by sort of cutting into it and queering it a little bit. And I think, like, part of doing that, like, one of the... I mean, there's lots of kind of lighter things in it and queer joy things in it as well, and looking at things like reality TV and Pilates and scissors, you know, and scissoring, which is so important. But also there's kind of a theme going through it, a darker theme of, like, how... You know how Moana Jackson says, like, colonization sucks for everyone, but it's looking at kind of like the particular Pākehā complicity, like structural complicity and personal complicity with, like, continuing to colonize at the same time as, like, being, I guess, abused or bruised by that same colonization. So that kind of cycle that goes around for, like, women and queer people. And I think yesterday or today a report came out about on Radio New Zealand about, like, the astronomic rates of domestic violence we have here, and the collection speaks to that a bit as well, about the sort of silences and erasures that make that continue on like a structural and a personal level. So there's quite a lot in it.
So covering kind of like a broad range of topics and kind of weaving them all in with each other.
Yeah, definitely. And there's a lot of, I like the way you use the word weaving in that, because it is kind of quite tactile the way that I've done it. I don't know if it's as beautiful as weaving, but a lot of the poems in there are like using a kind of cut and paste process, where I'll take two different, quite disparate sources, and I will put them together to, I don't know, make a different truth. Like there's one piece in there called, I think, Things You Don't Understand, and it's a cut and paste of, you know, Tammy Wynette's song Stand By Your Man, and also a report saying that the New Zealand police are no longer going to be responding to domestic violence call outs. Not that I want the police to be turning up, you know, like not that I love and respect the police, but it makes a new story out of those two stories that have both, you know, been part of my story, I guess.
Yeah, and that leads into my next question, kind of about your writing process and what it looks like, and specifically with this new collection of poems. Could you talk a bit about how this creative process went about in the making of this new body of work?
Oh, so I think I've learned through... So I recently completed a PhD, which was amazing. Like, I never thought that was something that I would ever get to do in my life. And through that, I learned that there's a term for something that I've always done, which is called queer scavenging, which is basically finding little bits that don't fit and joining them together in a kind of curious way. So there's that. That's what I've always done, and whether that's something that's sonic, you know, like a phrase that won't get out of my head, or whether that's a piece of text that I've found somewhere and kind of wanted to repurpose or illuminate, I guess. And so I think I alluded to it before, but my process has been more and more very literally with a pair of scissors and with glue, or with sometimes with, like, stuff that I found in the op shops, or, I especially like cutting into old white men stuff and making it different and new. That's, you know, always a joyful experience. But, so a lot of the poems in this book are very much poems that work on the page, I guess. And there's some of them that I haven't read out loud yet, and I don't know if I will, because I don't know, they're more concrete like that, they're more visual, and that I'm doing that more and more, and that's a new and great experience.
Yeah, and by the cutting and pasting, do you mean like the actual objects, or like you write and then print it out and then like kind of cut up the words and rearrange?
It can be either. So usually I would print out a text, whether it's like an academic text or a newspaper article or, you know, all of the above. And then I would rearrange it, you know, on a piece of paper or larger scale, like on the office floor. And then sometimes, that was when I had an office, you know, PhD style. My poor office mates, they would come in and there would be like scraps of paper all over the place. But also, so there's a poet called Dodie Bellamy, and she has this idea called cunt-ups rather than cut-ups. And for doing that, she cuts up like stuff that we think of as canonical, so like Shakespeare and all those people, and then she cuts it up with stuff that we don't consider to be like important texts. Like she's done stuff with like her dreams or with porn or with I don't know other stuff, so I've used that approach as well, like that cunt up approach. And like, for example, there's a poem called Admit Impediments, which is Shakespeare's sonnet 116 that I was made to memorize at school. And then like all these unhelpful things that people have said to me over the years that I've kind of like kept in my head and memorized and like thought that they said something about me, so I've written them all down, cut them all up. Originally, I like sewed them onto a canvas, but now they're a poem in a book.
Wonderful. And like with this approach and like with your writing, what are your hopes for readers as they delve into your book? Are there any thoughts or feelings you would like it to provoke or for readers to kind of like mull over certain feelings or thoughts?
Oof. I guess it makes me nervous thinking about readers, you know, like, because I think sometimes I, even though I'm writing into, like, into this great community that I'm part of, I sort of have to try and put those blinkers on a little bit. But I suppose I would like people to be curious. I would like it to, I would like these poems to leave people curious. Like, particularly if I think about other Pākehā readers, I want to be part of that conversation about thinking about how we're complicit, even as we are, you know, like also bruised by what's happening with our colonizing like structures and relationships.
Yeah, it's quite hard, eh? Because I feel like when you've when you're creating something, it's like this really personal, intimate thing, and it's like, I don't know, it's yours, and then suddenly it's kind of out in the world for people to kind of read and I don't know, kind of bring on their own history and their own memories and feelings.
Totally. And like, you know, my story is not the only story, and I don't want to make these poems like definitive or to, you know, or to suggest that. I do think it's interesting as well when we're writing about, I don't know, I guess queer stories, women's stories. Also, though, I think like writing stories of domestic violence is this really hard dance, because there's so much you're actually not allowed to say explicitly because of, for example, defamation laws, right? But if you can't say things explicitly, how can you say them out loud? You know, like how can you make things change? And that is a really, I think that's a really like interesting challenge, like not just in terms of like talking about domestic violence, but in terms of like talking about other like structural and personal violences, because a lot of them like don't even legally exist or something, you know, it's and poetry is a really good way to, I think, create some uncertainty and some feeling in lieu of actually being able to say some things out loud.
Yeah. And lastly, I've asked you to prepare a little reading for us from your new book. Would you like to introduce it and then begin with the reading?
I would love to do that. Let me just turn to it. Read you this poem, which is called Pilates Could Happen to Anyone. And the title is kind of a misrendering of a line by Tom Stoppard, who wrote in Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are Dead, that pirates could happen to anyone. And it also references a poem by Tusiata Arvia, who wrote an amazing poem, which is I Cannot Write a Poem About Gaza. So that's referenced in here. Mm-hmm. And it's for my friend H.J. Kilkelly, who I do Pilates with. So this is Pilates Could Happen to Anyone. One. H.J. has her abs on 2.5 springs, and I have my phone on record in the black box under my reformer. Because I'm going to write a poem about Pilates, I'm going to juxtapose the instructions we're given with the text from the stories on my Instagram feed. And I'm going to make a political point about the fucked up interconnectedness of wellness and white supremacy, lines like two. If you like to work hard, choose the springs at the high end of the suggested settings. And if you need to, you can reduce them halfway through the exercise. Please remember you should never feel any pain if you do stop straight away. While talks of ceasefire remain inconclusive, Israel is invading Rafah. Offering, hug a tree. Here's what you need to know. Bomb kills at least 12 people, including children, at 2 displacement camps in eastern Congo. Grit happens. It's Hell Week. 3 hours from Auckland, discover New Caledonia, back on the menu, Queen Olives. T-zone tight, all eyes on Rafah. The people of Gaza cannot wait, they have nowhere else to go. Hug the moon, the weather is grim, but we'll still do poetry, lick your toe, and wave it around a bit. Goodbye to dopamine addiction with micro-learning. Get the T-shirt. Springs, women, 1 to 1.5. Men, 1.5 to 2. 3. Over soy flat whites, we agree, we busy our bodies to shush our minds. Our momentum has taken over. We Google Kathleen Stanford Grant. We discuss our complex apocalypse composting systems for entitled white men and their nice white lady friends, because compost is better for the planet than setting them on fire in a big bin and sitting on the lid smoking. We've put a lot of thought into this. How we would watch them break down under a sprinkling of Tino Rangatiratanga, equity and drag queen story times. But this is a long-term project. And in the meantime, we consider who we'd smash first with our plough-refined guns. And the answer is always the patriarchy. We say it rolling our eyes in our heads on our bodies that we are resting from their control. We say it like it's a joke. 4. Lying on your back on the reformer with your feet on the footbar, take the hand straps and take the arms straight up to the ceiling, tabletop position, imprinted spine. To make it easier, make your teardrops smaller. T-zone tight, exhale now, reverse your teardrops direction, change the way the world works out. Pull the ribs to the hips, inhale, keep going, returning back down, curl up, exhale. 5. I cannot write a poem about Pilates. 6. Though I've been writing this one in the shower where I usually write my PhD, and in bed at night where I'm supposed to be doing sleep, and behind my eyes where the tears live. Last week I got to hang with both my grown-up children, and we walked safe down a safe street. My counsellor thinks it's a good idea to give the news a break.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for that, Liz.
That was Liz Brislin speaking to me about her new book, Show You're Working Out, which is available now from all good bookstores near you. You can also catch her at the Spoken Word Roundtable 2 event presented by Dead Bird Books, which is being held at Goblin on the 7th of August. You can purchase tickets at undertheradar.com.
Furious artists, so you can go to the opening for more than just the snacks.
We've now got some PJ Harvey for you. This is The Mess We're In.
Directly, you met me. think it's Wednesday, the evening, the mess we're in, and oh.
Oh,
That was 17 by Sharon Van Etten. And then before that, we had Before We Begin by Broadcast. Our interviews were quite short today, so I've taken on the orcs. And since Sophia's not here, I'm just playing all my favorite songs. So up next, we've got California by Joni Mitchell. Enjoy.
Sure looks bad. They won't give peace a chance. That was just a dream some of us had. Still a lot of lands to see, but I wouldn't want to stay here. It's too old and cold and settled in its ways here. All the California, California, coming home. I'm gonna see the folks I dig. I'll even kiss a sunset pig. California, I'm coming home. I met a redneck on a Grecian Isle who did the goat dance very well. He gave me back my smile, but he kept my camera to sell. Oh, the rogue, the red, red rogue. He cooked good omelettes and stews, and I might have stayed on with him there, but my heart cried out for you. California, oh, California, coming home. Oh, make me feel good, rock and roll band. I'm your biggest fan. California, I'm coming home. Oh, it gets so lonely when you're walking and the streets are full. Strangers, all the news on your ear just give you the blues. Just give you the blues. So I bought me a ticket. I caught a plane to Spain. Went to a party down a red dirt road. There were lots of pretty people there, reading Rolling Stone, reading Vogue. I said, how long can you hang around? I said, a week, maybe two, just until my skin turns brown. And I'm going home to California. California, I'm coming home. Oh, will you take me as I am, strung out on another man? California, I'm coming home. Streets are full of strangers. All the news at home. You read more about the war and the bloody changes. Oh, will you take me as I am? Will you take me as I am? Will you take me as I am?
It's the 95 BFM Art Guide on various artists.
It's paintings and that.
This week in the wonderful world of art in Tamaki Makaurau. As mentioned on the show, How to Disappear by Steve Carr is on at Gow Langsford until the 23rd of August. Also as mentioned on the show, Liz Breslin Collection of Poetry, Show You're Working Out, is available now from all good bookstores near you. Our Bart Karu, Come Talk to Me, The Aperture of the Moon, is an exhibition by artists Kalpana Pandurum and Lisa Crowley, which is on at Room until the 23rd of August. Throw by Philip Kelly opens to tonight at Charles Niao Gallery in the La Gonda building of Karangahape Road from 6 to 8pm. The exhibition runs until the 16th of August. Paintings by Seraphine Peck is currently on at Michaelette Gallery until the 23rd of August. Acts of Rest by Ruth and Esther Egg is currently showing at Season Gallery until the 23rd of August. Fore and Aft by Hawke's Bay-based artist John Brown is on at Melanie Roger Gallery until the 9th of August. Didymus Mountains by Kat Fuchs is on at Anna Miles Gallery until the 16th of August. If you have something you would like on the art guide, you can email us at arts@95bfm.com.
That was the 95BFM Art Guide.
Ko ira te hōtaka kato mō tēnei wiki. Nei te mihi ki a koutou kato e korero mai ki māua mō tēnei rā. That's all for us on Various Artists today. Ngā mihi nui to everyone who spoke with us, Steve Carr and Liz Breslin. Nei rā hoki te mihi ki a koutou e whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in. And remember, you can listen back to all of today's pieces on 95bfm.com. Up next is The Land on the Good Groove with Nigel. I'm Maya, and that was Various Artists. We'll catch you next week. You're listening to 95BFM. Ka kite.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.